This is not a drill. This is not a drill. General quarters. General quarters. All hands on your battle station.
Welcome to Midrats with Sal from Commander Salamander and Eagle One from Eagle Speak at Sea or Shore, your home for a discussion of national security issues and all things maritime.
And welcome aboard, everybody. I am the aforementioned Sal, along with my co-host, the ever genial Eagle One of Eagle Speak, with you live today. Unless you're hearing this on the podcast, then we're not live. But hey, for the lucky few that are with us live, we really appreciate you taking time out of your afternoon to join us. And if you are with us live, if you scroll down to the bottom of the show page, that is where you will find the chat room. You can roll in there with the usual suspects if you have some observations you would like to share during the course of the show, or if there is a question that you would want to make sure that my co-host and I ask before the end of the show today. That's a great place to put it because we're both monitoring it during the course of the show. We'll be glad to take your ideas and fold it into the conversation. And if you have to leave and take care of some business, remember you can always come back and listen to the part of the show you missed by getting the full archive over at Blog Talk Radio, or just subscribe to the free podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or all the other aggregators out there. And speaking of communications, we're going to roll into today's show. And today we're going to look at how our Navy and its leadership to better communicate both internally and externally. And we may as well cover not just the Navy, but organizations in general, because there is a lot of overlap there. And you know, how can organizations effectively communicate what they have to communicate to influencers, the general public, and even potential customers? And some of the things that make it effective are ineffective. And we've got a great professional on board today for the full hour to discuss this and more. Chris Cervello, Commander, United States Navy, at least for the interim. Chris has over 20 years of global experience in strategic communications, messaging, branding, digital strategy, government affairs, and also helping our senior leaders do all they need to do to communicate with the public. And I said at least for the moment because Chris is about to join the esteemed legion of USN retired as he's looking forward this winter to going into terminal leave. And he's smart, and we should maybe do a show, if not with Chris, somebody else on some of the transitions to the civilian sector. But he's already preparing the ground there as one of the founding members of Provision Advisors, and they're going to be helping their clients focus on building communications with the media, key influencers, and also having a dynamic communication structure, which, as a PAO, he will be doing. And we just wanted to kick off the show because Chris is still of active duty, and he's already beginning his transition. But we're bringing him on as our guest today. He's just speaking for himself, not the United States Navy or any organizations he presently am now or will be part of. And Chris, welcome back to Midrats. We're really glad to have you.
Sal, Eagle One, thanks for having me. Great opportunity to spend an hour with you and the listeners on your podcast.
And when I was looking at preparing for the show, and it's funny, it's, I'll say this in my crotchety little voice, I knew him when he was just a lieutenant. You have been, much to your credit, one of the more engaged and high profile within the parameters and direction and guidance you get from who you're working with that I've had the pleasure of getting to know in the last 20 years. And your career mark at 20, you know, we look back, if my math is correct, that's the end of the 1990s, back when, for those that study Navy history a bit, the first IT-21 battle group was getting underway where they were integrating communications that were IP-based, increasing our ability to reach and for people to reach not just what the battle group was doing, but also the sailors on board. And they begin that transition from the old school public affairs construct to where we are in 2018, where you can be in the middle of nowhere in Central Asia and you don't need very much fancy or expensive equipment to be in real-time communication back almost anywhere. And I just thought if we could take a minute just to kind of do a retrospective of what are the big changes, either plus or minus, for the practicing public affairs officers that you've seen in the arc of your career.
Sure, happy to do that. I think that you know some people would argue at about that time that things got really good and they got really bad for our ability to communicate to and from deployed assets. If you were a sailor on board a ship, you might lament the technology because it meant that the leadership had much more connection to you. They were able to reach out to you and touch you from far away. The autonomy that our leadership enjoyed up until that time was pretty high. And some would even say that it's declined since then because of the ability for that reach from leadership. In the public affairs world, I'd say it's just the opposite. Our ability to tell the story of the Navy and to speak to global audiences, including families from our deployed ships, has really skyrocketed since I entered the Navy in the late 90s. Our ability to push information via email and then to be able to move large files of imagery in near real time, and then most recently in the last decade, our ability to push video from really anywhere in the world to be able to tell our Navy story has become really second to none when you look at any other Navy or any other organization. So I think it is really helped our ability to explain what the Navy does. Now, I'm not sure that we always take full advantage of that. Hopefully over the next hour we can explore, the areas where we can improve on the technology that's now afforded us.
Yeah, let me pull the thread on that one a little bit, because you hit on what a topic I'm interested in, which is getting the Navy message out. Are we getting the Navy message out effectively? And is that, if we're not, is it because we have leadership that's gun shy about being firm and the need to have a bigger, more powerful Navy, or is it's just lost in the cloud of all the other stuff?
So before I answer your question specifically, I'm pulled over here on the side of I-95. I spent the weekend in Richmond, Virginia at a under 12 girls soccer tournament. And as I was preparing for our conversation, I started thinking about what I wanted to talk about, and at about that same time, I was listening to the coaches yell at the players, and they were yelling, communicate, communicate, you got to communicate, you've got to talk to each other. And I watched in amazement as these young girls, they knew what the word communicate was or meant, but they didn't really know how to do it as an organization. They didn't really know what it meant to communicate. They knew how to talk. They knew how to talk to each other. They knew how to call for the ball or to pass information. But to be able to communicate as a cohesive group was something that they hadn't learned how to do. I kind of wonder at times if the Navy and other large organizations don't suffer from the problems that my daughter's U-12 soccer team does. And I don't mean that to be funny, and I don't mean it to be disparaging. I mean that we think we understand what the word means, but we don't really take time to go through the process and to break that process down. Much like the coach on the sideline yelling into players that had never really worked through that process, at times I have thought over my 20-year career that we take for granted in government, in the military, and in the Navy, kind of the components of what successful communication are. It's a clear understanding of who our audiences are. It's a clear understanding of what we want our approach to be and how we want to communicate the messages that we want to get out. And then I think most severely, it's an underappreciation for the obstacles to communicate. So, I think it's important before we kind of jump into, does the Navy communicate well or what are the problems with the Navy's ability to communicate? I think it's important to think of that communication in terms of audience approach and obstacles. I think they're like a lot of folks. I think that the Navy needs a more coherent narrative. And what I mean by that is they need a story that both in the Navy, who would be the communicators and who would carry that message, folks out of the Navy and the potential audience would understand. And I think until we get that narrative down, until we get comfortable communicating it in a way that people understand, I think we're gonna continue to struggle. And I'll take a breath there in case you have specific questions about that.
Yeah, I was. I'll come back to the question I was gonna ask later. But you prompted and you hit on something that we've talked about here with our friend Brian McGrath, who I know you're familiar with. And it's really, really frustrating, conversations we've had both online and offline with him and others on this exact topic of the Navy and the narrative, and specifically when a window opened a couple of years ago to at least have a window of an opportunity to talk about sea power and to help justify growing to a 350 plus or minus Navy. And it involved the narrative. And I think I wish we had 49 other versions of Brian, because he spent time traveling around different organizations in the state of Maryland, giving a lot of like rotaries. I don't know if he did exclusively Rotary, or I think he did other things just Rotary, but organizations like that, to talk about sea power. And if nobody has had an opportunity to see his presentation or his talk, really, it's up on YouTube. I'd encourage everybody to go look at what Brian did. And it's the frustration that we've seen where how do we get out to not just the American public. A classic example, again, is we will this winter have a rather large cohort of new people coming onto the Hill from both Congress and the Senate, many of which don't know a frigate from a falafel. And they and their staffs are going to need to be brought up to speed as well. Where have you seen, if you examples, and it doesn't have to be military, of an organization that has been able to really build narrative and build inertia with that narrative that might be a benchmark to at least begin a discussion on ways that we as the maritime side of the National Security House can help build our story to explain why we're asking a taxpayer to give us a little bit of coin or to borrow some from the grandkids to give us?
One of the things, and I appreciate you mentioning Brian. I'm a big fan of Brian and the work that he's done, both when he was in uniform and now out of uniform. And I think what Brian's Sea Power effort really proved to those of us that watched it closely and hopefully the leadership is that perfection and complexity does not need to be the enemy of the good. Brian's message was very simple. Now, did it entail or did it capture every element of sea power, every element of what our Navy does and will do in the future? No, because he had a finite amount of time and he understood the audience in which he was talking to. As I've watched goods and bads from a communication standpoint in the Navy and out of the Navy. It's the organizations that keep their message simple. They understand how to explain what they do and the value that they provide to the marketplace, or in this case, to the national security of our country. They repeat the same messages over and over again. And I think that, that's where we have failed in the Navy, particularly, is that we really have not had an executable plan, and we haven't had the discipline to stick to that plan. We are pretty good at taking outside people's lead, like Brian or others, where we'll coalesce around the narrative of the day or the story that we want to tell. We start to tell it, and then we devolve into parochialism or community bias. And we kind of lose that larger Navy story. If you look at, our fellow Sea Service and the Marines, I think they do a much better job of telling their story as compared to the Navy as a whole. They are Marines first, and then their individual communities second. I think where we in the Navy tend to fall short is we don't necessarily identify ourselves as sailors first. We're officers, we're enlisted, we're aviators, we're PAOs, we're SWOs, we're a particular rate. And that tends to be the story that we tell instead of telling a larger Navy story. So I think until we're able to recognize that, until we're able to coalesce around that simple narrative, until we're able to put together a plan, stick to that plan, and commit to making sure that we identify and communicate to particular audiences, we're going to find it difficult to really communicate on a level that gets people's attention and makes the case not only for Sea Power, but for the immense investment that Sea Power, effective Sea Power, requires from the country, both in terms of money and in terms of people.
Wow, you just ran through my entire list of questions. Where do you start telling the Navy story? I know they've tried to say, look, 90% of the goods in the world travel by sea, and that's why we need this stuff. Is there a single unifying thing for all the communities that we have that all of us could agree on, do you think? Is that what we really need to find? And then find somebody, a warrior who can actually talk to that as why it's important for the country?
Well, I think that, my experience is that we have lots of warriors that are able to do this. But unfortunately, there's lots of distractions that they have to deal with, and that they sometimes get bumped either off message or off of this plan that is needed to be able to execute. I think that if we want to tell the Navy story, I think we have to actually go to the center of the country, draw an arc as far away from the water as possible. And that's where we start telling the story, because our Navy, the value of our Navy, and I'm kind of preaching to the choir with the two of you and with this audience, the value of our Navy really it goes well beyond the shores on the right and left coast of the United States, but it's about the ability to safeguard that merchandise and that those goods and services that travel well into the center part of the country. And I think that we have to have a narrative that not only holds up to the scrutiny of the Hill and the budget process and all the important things that make the Navy work, but it's gotta hold up, and it's gotta make sense to the people that may or may not have ever seen a gray hull in their life. And if we get that that narrative down, and if we get that plan down to the point where it can hold water with a Rotary Club in Peoria or somewhere else in the center of the country, then I think we can start from there and begin to really make some progress.
I'll circle back to the question I was going to ask before I got distracted by the shiny object is, and if, and last time if you're with us, if I asked you this question, I'll apologize. It's always a good one to bring back. But in the time that I served with the Germans, one thing that I developed a great appreciation for is they have a really detailed doctrinal breakout between that's slightly in conflict with the American definition, between what is public affairs, what is information operations, and what is psyops. And, you know, a lot of that obviously has to do with your audience. And I'm just curious, you can have one event take place, and depending upon which audience higher powers want to give or create three different objects, three different programs for the same event, you can have such a very distinctly different messaging going out depending upon whether you're more concerned with the PAO, the info, or the psyops. How does the definition of the audience affect how you shape or deliver a message? And is it always clear when an event is taking place who your audience is?
Well, I mean, I think you hit it. I mean, doctrinally, there are clear lanes in which, you know, we have to stick when communicating a message. But I think that, you know, when you kind of zoom out and you're talking about the Navy narrative, hopefully you're able to come up with a narrative or an explanation or a story that holds water across the full range of audiences. And you know, you may have to dial up the specificity, or you may have to dial up the type of information that you share with those audiences to be able to reach them. But I think that to be effective across all audiences, you've got to have that story down, and you've got to be able to tell it beyond the professional communicator level, right? I mean, this is something that, you know, obviously public affairs officers, we deal directly with the news media, but the ability to tell the Navy story ought to transcend really all doctrinal levels of communicators and really belong to the leadership and the sailors of the Navy, so that regardless of what audience we're trying to communicate to as an organization, the different levels within the Navy, and I include, you know, retirees and people that want to carry that message for us, that they are able to carry it in a way that that holds water with the audience that they're speaking to, and that encourages those audiences to kind of pick it up and carry it forward. And that includes, you know, folks. That includes the American people as a whole. It includes folks in the Navy that, you know, may or may not understand where they kind of fit into the bigger picture. It includes influencers like folks up on Capitol Hill. It includes our allies and our potential adversaries. I mean, the narrative ought to be able to cover each of those audiences, so that those respective audiences understand what the Navy is about, what type of combat power it delivers, so that there's no confusion as to what we do.
One of the functions of a public affairs, I would think, is to deal with crisis communication. So when we have a situation like the collisions Fitzgerald and John S. McCain are involved in, is there, I mean, in addition to dealing with the crisis and getting the story out, is there a way to turn that into make the point about, you know, these ships are now damaged and we don't have enough ships really to fill in some of those gaps, you know, or is that kind of off the kind of ghoulish way to approach things, is that we've lost some sailors, but we really need more ships.
Well, I mean, I think the Navy leadership tried very hard, I mean, to look at that crisis in various stages. Obviously the immediate stage was, expressing condolences and taking care of those that that perished and that that were injured in the collision, and to make sure that those sailors and their families were honored and as I said, taken care of. And then you kind of go to that next phase of, okay, let's learn everything we can about a particular incident so that we don't have to, so that we don't make the same mistakes. If there were, what can you learn so that you can get better in the future? And then I think, as you look at an arc of a crisis, perhaps there is opportunity to take those lessons learned and to take the sacrifices of those sailors that lost lives and try to find a larger good. I think what we learned from what, at least I'll just speak for me, what I learned from everything that I read about Fitzgerald and McCain is that, we have a Navy that is very busy, that has lots of commitments, and that sometimes because of those commitments, we press when maybe we shouldn't, when we shouldn't press. The other thing that we all that larger audiences learned, that those of us that have served know, is that it's a dangerous business that we operate in. So I think that as you look at a particular crisis, whether it's the Fitzgerald or McCain or just any crisis, you want to handle the crisis in the short term. You want to kind of just get day to day. And then as you move out of that crisis, it's, okay, what can we learn from this crisis and how can we how as an organization can we get better from it? My sense is that that's where Navy leadership is that they want to make sure that we don't have those types of those incidents anymore, and that we use the publicity that came from the incident and came from the post-incident investigation to shine a really bright light on the problems that we have had to deal with. And size, I think, is one of them, so that we can take that interest and turn it into productive action.
Obviously, and I know it's a real frustrating thing for people in the public affairs business, is just trying to get the message out. I had a couple of rather sad conversations with one of the public affairs guys at HGI staff in Steel Gardens. So more than one occasion where he had a great story that absolutely nobody picked up. But there are some larger pixelized obstacles out there that are both internal and external, those that perhaps we inflict on ourselves, but some that are just structural. What are some of the major obstacles that you see from the professional public a person to get that message out?
Well, the communication environment that we all are operating in today, whether you're a senior leader, whether you're simply just a member of the organization, whether you're a professional communicator, or whether you're an audience trying to learn from those organizations, I think the biggest obstacle is just the noise that exists in the communication space. There are a lot of things being talked about across many different channels. And so being able to craft a message and being able to be disciplined enough to deliver that message multiple times in multiple places so that it can begin to break through that noise and get to the audience is very challenging. It's challenging because you're dealing with the time component. It's challenging because, let's face it, we're not that good at communication disciplines times in a large organization. So to me, the biggest obstacle is the crowded, noisy space that is the communication environment. I think that you can get through that by being more disciplined, by sticking with a plan or creating a plan that anticipates that you're not going to have your message received on the first, second, or even third time that you deliver it, and that you have to stick with it. And so, you know, the more we're able to do that, I think the more we're able to overcome that that noise. The other thing I would say is that organizations that live their values and that actually do live the messages and themes and the stories that they're trying to communicate, I think handle that noisy communication environment much better than organizations that, that don't, you know, I mean, because, you know, you communicate so much more by your actions than by your words or your tweets or your Facebook posts. So an organization that, that understands its story, that lives its narrative, they're going to be able to overcome those obstacles much more than ones that don't.
Well, how do you coach the senior leadership and the junior leadership all the way down to the deck plates? How do you coach the people to get that one key message out? And you know, how difficult is that a task?
I think it's a very difficult task, and the reason that I say that is that I don't believe if there's any, I think any dagger that I would throw during this hour, it really is only this as at our organization. I mean, I think that we've got great people. I think we try very hard, and I think we have a good story. But in order to share that story and in order to, as you say, get that message out, one, I think it's something that we have to address when we have to begin to build that capability as soon as we bring people into the organization. So whether that's sailors, whether that's family members, whether that's, you know, leaders, we have to think about communication as a capability, and a skill set from the moment that folks walk in the door. Waiting until, our officers make O5 and are about to go to command, or waiting until our enlisted folks make chief petty officer, it's too late, right? I mean, we have to think about teaching communication, and whether that's communicating to your division as a junior officer, or whether it's communicating to your unit as a commanding officer, or whether it's communicating to the U.S. Congress or the American public writ large when you're a flag officer. My ability to coach is definitely limited because we don't start early enough in developing that skill set. So I would say that as we look to the future and as we want to do a better job of communicating the value and need for a Navy, part of that starts with a coherent narrative. Part of that starts with a disciplined plan. And part of it starts with providing the training and discussion of the communication skill set with our people very, very early in their career, much earlier than we do it now, in order to make them as effective as possible.
And this might be a little bit of a touchy subject, given where you are right now. So if you really need to walk around it, please do. But building off what you're just talking about is getting out there early enough and junior enough. Is you also develop habits early on in any career that you carry with you. And either they stay there in the background or they build. And usually they build because the habits you learn early, they stick with you for a while. And what we've seen in the last few years, at least from the chief seats, has been a steady retreat from engaging with the media, both traditional, non-traditional, and otherwise, DOD-wide. But the Navy, reflecting the personality of the CNO, has also been following, if not leading, that curve. If you could talk a little bit about why we have seen that. And is that really the most productive long-term habit for us as an organization to develop if we really want to be able to communicate effectively?
Well, first off, retreating and not taking full advantage of the opportunity to tell our story, I think we all would agree is not the right path to take. But I think the rest of my answer might actually surprise you. I think that guidance and those instructions have been misunderstood. And quite honestly, I think people have hidden behind the ambiguity of that guidance as an excuse to not get out and tell our story. I was working in the Pentagon at the time when that guidance was put out. And there was a real concern that as senior leaders went to different conferences, as they spoke to members of the media, as they were just out in the public domain, they were, as a way of to communicate, they were kind of walking right up to the line of what I won't say classified because I don't think it was a classified line, but there was a lot of open source information that spoke to our capabilities, our readiness, that there was a real concern that we were putting out too much information for our potential adversaries to consume and to use against us. And there was, there was pretty good evidence that that was the case. And so I think as a way of trying to meter that and to kind of back down that the level of information, not the level of engagement, but the level of information, leadership spoke out against it. And they asked folks to really scrutinize the type of information that they were putting out. I think that that guidance was misinterpreted, and there's no doubt it was interpreted as a gag order or as a hey, limit who and when you speak to folks. I have a number of colleagues in the media that were very frustrated by by the result. Because it felt that one, it hampered their ability to do their job, but sort of more holistically, they felt like it hampered the Navy's ability to tell their story. I'm very confident that the current leadership that exists in the Navy wants the leadership to get out and responsibly tell our story. They want them to get out aggressively and tell our story. And so we have to find a way, they have to find a way to kind of get beyond the misunderstanding that some of the guidance has caused and get people out there to tell our story. If only because one, more and more recruiting will continue to be a challenge. So to be able to bring talented young men and women into the military, particularly the Navy, will become a challenge if we don't get out and tell our story. We are asking for significant amounts of money to maintain, modernize, and grow the naval force. So that requires taxpayers and bill payers up on the Hill to understand how we're going to use their money. And we owe it to our folks that are serving that they understand how they are being used, the role that our Navy is playing in the world. And so we have to get out there and communicate. And as I said, and I really can't say this strong enough, I very much believe that the leadership wants people to get out there. So I'm hopeful that they will continue to clarify some of the misunderstanding and kind of turn the organization loose to be able to get out there and fill that void that's begun to exist over the last year or two.
One of the I think you talked earlier about the Marines and their ability to communicate their I guess their purpose pretty effectively, and I see the Army has kind of begun to adopt a very similar strategy to the Marines. But the Navy story seems to me to be much harder to tell because the mission is, we're not putting guys on the beach. Well, we are, but we're not putting people on the beach to run to the sounds of guns. I mean, the Navy is far more complicated than that. How difficult is it to to couch a message. I mean, it seems to me kind of namby-pamby to say, well, you know, we keep the sea lines open, or we're a global force for good, or whatever the heck some of the other slogans are advertising people have come up with. How hard is it to get, you know, this is a country that depends on the ocean, you know, and so we need to keep the ocean free. How hard is that message to get across or to formulate?
I don't think it's very hard to formulate. If you kind of take the time, you know, as Brian and others have done in and out of uniform to find ways to put it in the vernacular or in the ecosystem of the audience that you're trying to talk to. I mean, if we want to talk in our language and in our vocabulary, it becomes very hard for people to understand. But when you know, walk into any American home today and you look around at all of the, you know, products that come all over the world, when you look at, you know, the internet, and when you look at other sources of information, and you know the majority of that travels you know, in cables under the sea, and when you look at, you know, the relative security that we as Americans enjoy, you know, all three of those areas are in large part to a capable Navy. You know, by having a robust and capable Navy out there to allow those products to the United States and to keep the United States safe, you know, it's in that conversation that people begin to understand the value of what we provide. We're not going to tweet this problem away. You know, we're not going to solve it by 45-second commercials that run on TV alone. We are going to have to play a bit of a ground game, you know, both as a service, as retirees, as people that in industry that have a vested interest in a strong and capable Navy. We're going to have to get out and, you know, tell that story in a way that Americans can understand, or we're going to continue to be chasing this problem for years to come. We're not going to have the size fleet that we need. We're going to lag in recruit. And we're going to find that our adversary push us around because we haven't done a good enough job, you know, telling our story to allies and folks at home so that we have that capable Navy.
And part of that, I believe, is a term in some prior conversations we've had that you've used that has a lot of nuance to it. I want you to flesh it out a bit. You use the term, everybody talks about social media, et cetera, et cetera, and it's almost become background noise. But you use the phrase thoughtful social technology. Flesh that out a bit for me, how you define thoughtful social technology, and how does that enhance an approach to getting a message out at Dunrow?
Well, you know, the Navy, what I have found in my two decades in the Navy is that we generate and share the most reliable information at the O5 and E5 level, you know, broadly speaking, at the CO of the unit and at the work center supervisor level. I mean, that's where the rubber meets the road, both in terms of the great work that we do, but also in terms of the communication nodes when it comes to information that exists in a unit or information that would leave that unit. And so I think that we can use social technology, you know, social media and other technology to amplify and connect sources of information to those nodes to either push information out from there to be able to really tell our story in a way that makes sense to folks, or to be able to communicate information into that unit so that they understand where they fit into the larger national security or Navy apparatus. I don't know that we do that as well as we could. I think at times we do pieces of that well, but I think that there are is technology, even for a largely dispersed maritime force, there is technology available to us that can push and pull information in a much more effective way than we're currently doing today. And that's going to help us keep our people informed. It's going to help us keep the audiences that really want to help us tell our story informed, so that we can go out and tell larger audiences what the Navy does for them day in and day out.
Yeah, I'm looking at there've been a number of recent movies that involve the Navy or recent and upcoming, and TV shows. So if you have a show like The Last Ship, you have the old Top Gun, the new Top Gun coming out, the Hunt for Red October, or whatever this current submarine movie is, like I remember the name of. How does that? I mean, does the Navy cooperate with them to get the larger point across that, yeah, this is an interesting story, but there's a larger role? Does that ever get mentioned when we're working with these folks? You got to mention that there's more to this than just this submarine trying to save the president of Russia or whatever that plot is on the new submarine movie.
Well, I think, I mean, for all of these, I mean, in large part, we're not relying solely on that particular project to communicate our message for us. I think that what we are trying to do, and there is real value if the project is done right, is to kind of help break through the noise a bit and to get people to pay attention. Top Gun is a great example. I mean, it grabbed people on many different levels, from a cinematic standpoint, whether it was, the aircraft dogfighting, whether it was a young Cruise and Kelly McGillis, whatever the case may be. But what you want people to take away from that, in addition to the storyline, is hey, wow, our Navy does some pretty cool stuff. Either A, maybe that's something that I would like to do from a recruiting angle, or hey, maybe I'd like to pay a little bit closer attention to what our Navy does. So you're using those projects as a way of hooking them so that they're more attuned in that crowded information space. They're more attuned and more willing to take on the other messaging and the other engagement opportunities that are out there. I haven't seen the new submarine movie, but I hear great things about it. I hear that it's action-packed. It's got a well-known cast. It seems to pull people in. So hopefully, we'll use that project and be able to use it as a launching point, either for recruiting or as a way of talking about the value of submarine, value of a deployed Navy, or whatever the case may be. But that's really where I see the value of our engagement with Hollywood. I mean, we have such few opportunities to introduce the American public to the platforms and the people that make up our Navy. Taking advantage of the opportunities that Hollywood gives us, is very smart, and if done right, can yield quite a bit of positive energy, from these audiences.
As the 24-hour news cycle has turned into a 24-minute and sometimes 24-second news cycle, it's obvious that one of the largest challenges of people whose business is messaging, public affairs, communicating with the press has become even more of a challenge, especially in the area of responding to credible but very negative accusations that have been made in public. What are some of the fundamentals of an organization to do that, you know, whether it's in time or substance or method? And what are some of the areas, as that news cycle has compressed, that not just the militaries but organizations in general need to get better at?
I think probably more than ever, relationships matter with the news media. So because the time it takes from a story to go from local or from regional to national or international, having those relationships are very important, because you are able to, one, you're able to kind of rely on the knowledge of the person that you're talking to be able to kind of hopefully figure out what's reality versus fiction. Two, providing context, along with whatever the news peg may be is very important. And I would say three, probably more than ever, you have to have members of the organization, whether it be professional communicators or leadership, and probably more importantly, leadership, that are willing to engage and willing to either correct the record, provide context, or share pieces of the story that may not be popular, as a way of making sure that the story is correct. Bad news is bad, but incorrect bad news, I think, is even worse. And so you want to make sure that you're leveraging those relationships, that you're leveraging the ability to provide context, and you're engaging as much as you can, as a way of making sure that the right information gets out there. The other thing that I would say, because we're very good, particularly in the Navy, at working a negative story or a story that necessarily isn't good for the Navy. I mean, we understand we have good relationships. We understand that we need to provide context, and we know we need to engage. Where I think we need to do better in this fast and crowded information space is we need to do a better job of telling the good things that we do to our audiences. And so if that's working through the media, great. And in some cases, though, in today's media environment, you know, outlets are only interested in telling the salacious or the negative stories. That's fine. Then we need to find other ways to get that story out, as a way of balancing it, and as a way of using all of the communication opportunities that exist to tell the story, about the Navy. How much did the American people learn about the Navy from the negative coverage that was associated with two ship collisions? We have 280 ships in our Navy. And so if we only let the story be about the 17 sailors that perished and about the two ships that collided with merchants, and we don't tell the stories of the other 278 ships and the other, the 365,000 sailors that are out there putting their life on the line to keep the country free, not as a way of spinning or downplaying the bad news, but simply as a way of balancing making that ratio of good to bad known to the audience, then that's kind of shame on us as an organization. So I think that there's a lot that we can do to balance the good with the bad in today's communication environment.
Yeah. I mean, the trouble is, as you're well aware, is that, and you just said, I mean, if it bleeds, it leads. If it's bad news, it gets
right.
Play. If the Navy people are out helping the citizens of the Northern Marianas recover after a super typhoon, that seems to get little play, little interest. And I'm not even sure anybody in the United States really knows that's even happening. You know, of course, I don't have much attention anybody in the United States pays the Northern Marianas anyway. But It used to be that there were radio shows, television shows that actually took, true stories of the LAPD or true stories. You know, is there is there a place for, and I think even the Navy used to have a TV show like that, you know, is there a place in the modern world for I don't want to call it propaganda, but, you know, getting those good stories out like that, here's what your Navy's doing today kind of stories?
But I think that there definitely are. I just, for whatever reason, I think we've lulled ourselves into this idea of if it bleeds, it leads. And so we spend so much time dealing with that, and we should. I mean, we should make sure that we're attentive and that we are dealing with those types of stories. But I know lots and lots of reporters, both at the national and trade level, but also at the local level, that would love to be able to share stories of what the Navy is doing. Now, they're going to tell the negative stories when they happen, for sure. But I just don't know, as an organization, if we lean forward enough and take full advantage, as we were talking about, of the technology that's available to us to share those stories. You know, more and more platforms like YouTube are becoming extremely popular with younger folks, really across all ages, but particularly with younger folks. So to be able to share, firsthand stories of what it means to serve in the Navy, or to share small vignettes of what the Navy does day in and day out, in defense of the national defense strategy or in defense of our national security, I think if we had the people and the money and the organizational know-how to do that, I think that there's an audience out there that would consume it. Again, doesn't mean that bad news may not trumpet when it happens. But at least that balance of information would be a little bit closer to what life is like in the fleet. And as we get to kind of the end of our hour together, I do want to make the point. I mean, we are very, very good at being contrarian in the Navy. We're very good at, whether it's junior officers or whether it's retirees or whatever the case may be, we're very good at kind of pointing out where we're broke or where things need to be fixed. I'm not so sure as a group and as an organization of like-minded folks that we take the same amount of time, passion, and energy to tell the good things that our Navy does. And I think that, again, as you start to look at, like, how do we move the needle in making people understand what our Navy does and the value that it provides, perhaps more of a more of a grassroots effort to tell those stories to our own networks and to outside networks, would help move that needle a bit. And I know that sounds a little Danish, but I have to say that I think that if we took that time, we would see some successes.
And we are coming near the top of the hour, and I wanted to be time to talk about, kind of something I mentioned in the intro. Because it's everybody on active duty eventually reaches that point that they step over to the other side and learn which color shoes need to wear with which color suit. And I still stand by, but fashion aside, an adult man does not wear light brown shoes with a dark suit. This is a hill I'm willing to die on. But you've done a really good job, at least from a distance, in a broad sense, of giving yourself something to direct your energies in as you transfer to the civilian sector. Talk for a little bit about what you're going to be doing when you go on terminal leave there in February, and how that's going to leverage your experience you had in the Navy to go in that direction.
Thanks, Sal. I appreciate that opportunity. I'm very lucky. I've had a lot of great mentors in the communication world and in the senior leader and in senior leader circles that have given me some experiences that will directly translate to the civilian world. My hope is to take the lessons that I learned in the Navy, the goods and the bads, when it comes to communication, the goods and the bads when it comes to leadership, the goods and the bads when it comes to just kind of who I am as a person, and be able to put those for other people outside of the Navy that are faced with similar challenging communication problems and opportunities. So I hope to still be able to provide some support and some service to the Navy, whether it's formally or informally, but I'm very interested in taking what I've learned and being able to share that with corporations, with outside business entities that face similar problems, probably not to the degree that we do in terms of reps and sets in the military, and so be able to take full advantage of those reps and sets and help people learn from the challenges that they have.
Well, as a former employee of large corporations who used to deal with the public affairs people a lot, you're going to do great, Chris. You're going to do a great job. Thank you for being with us today. It's been a very fast hour as far as I'm concerned, and I certainly wish you the best of luck as things go along.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate the time.
And really enjoyed the conversation, Chris. And we'll keep in touch. Enjoy your transition. And it's all going to be a great time for all. Have a great Thanksgiving, too.
Thanks. You too.
And thank you very much, everybody, for joining us for another edition of MidRats. And we wish all of y'all a great Thanksgiving and holiday season. And until next time, we hope you have a great Navy Day. Cheers.
Mike Maloney wants to marry me, and so leave the strand and Piccadilly.